For more information on ancient dragon Zengate and Taigen's teachings, please visit our website at www.ancientdragon.org. Our teachings are offered to the community through the generosity of our supporters. To make a donation online, please click on the link for Just Give on our website.
Good morning, everyone. I'm very, very happy to have with us this morning Shiwaku Okumura Roshi, who's been here the last couple of days teaching about the great compassion Bodhisattva Kannon. Shiwaku is an old friend and is certainly one of the foremost scholars and translators and practitioners of Dogen's Way. We've worked together on a few books of translations of Dogen, Dogen's Pure Standards for the Zen Community, The Wholehearted Way, and Dogen's Extensive Record. And Shiwaku has translated other books of Dogen and written important books, Living by Vow and Realizing Genjo Koan, and is working on a book of poetry of Homeless Kodo, right? Sawaki Roshi.
Not poetry. The collection of short sayings.
Oh, sayings of Sawaki Kodo Roshi, a very important Soto teacher, Soto Zen teacher in Japan in the 20th century, teacher of Shiwaku Roshi's teacher, Uchiyama Roshi. Anyway, we're very fortunate to have him here with us today, and thank you very much for coming, Shiwaku.
And Dogen Zen teaching again. Last 2 days, even though because of the delay of my flight, I couldn't participate from the beginning, but the first lecture Taigen-san gave for me. But we studied one koan story or a dialogue about Avalokiteshvara or Kanze Om Bosatsu. Kanze Om Bosatsu is a symbol of Buddha's compassion. And I talked on three texts about this koan. One is Hekigan-roku or Blue Cliff Record, and second is Shoyo-roku or Book of Serenity, and third is Dogen Zenji's Shobo Genzo Kannon. Kannon is the abbreviation of Kanze Om Bosatsu. So those three texts deals with this one particular core dialogue between Ungan Donjo or Yun Yan, who was the teacher of Tozan or Donshan, and Tozan was the founder of Chinese Soto tradition, and Dogo was the Dharma brother of Ungan, Dogo or Dao Wu. So they are both very important ancestors in our lineage. And I try to re-study and talk about those three texts. Three texts. Hekigan-roku has been studied in Rinzai tradition, and Shoyo-roku was made and have been studied in Soto tradition. And of course, Dogen is the founder of Japanese Soto Zen tradition. So it's kind of a good way to study sameness and difference of Zen teaching about this one particular koan. Unfortunately, I didn't have enough time to complete my talk on Dogen's Kanon. Today I don't have much time, so I just briefly talk about what this Kanon is in the conversation or discussions about those two important teachers and those three texts. As you know, or as I said, a Kanon is a symbol of Buddha's compassion, a bodhisattva. And usually, the painting on that in that frame is one form of Kanon named Ichiyo Kanon. Ichiyo means one leaf, but actually not a leaf, but the Avalokiteshvara sitting on a petal of a lotus flower and floating on the water. So there are many forms of Avalokiteshvara, both in China and Japan. Of course, Avalokiteshvara originated from India. So there are many forms, but Avalokiteshvara is commonly considered as a object of worshipping, and many people visit the temples or shrines Avalokiteshvara was enshrined and make obeisance and ask some help whenever they have some problems or troubles or difficulties. They visited Avalokiteshvara and ask some help, because Avalokiteshvara is a goddess of compassion. People believe, you know, Avalokiteshvara could some help. That is a very common idea or understanding of who is Avalokiteshvara in common Buddhism in Asia. But when we studied those three Zen texts and the original dialogue between Ungan and Dogo, we find what they are talking about is not that kind of a goddess of mercy. But Avalokiteshvara in their conversation is this totality of interdependent origination. You know, we are living within interconnectedness. That is a very basic teaching of almost all Mahayana Buddhist traditions. So we are part of this interconnectedness. And actually, there are no such individual beings, in my case, called Shohaku, as an independent entity. Independent entity means this person can exist and live without connection and relation and support by others. You know, we human, especially human beings, when we were born in a very immature stage as a baby, so we need a lot of help and support to survive. And even we grown up and become so-called independent person, still we need support from other people and other things, you know, in order to live. We need air, and air is not me. And we need water, of course. And, you know, more than 70% of this body is water. So this body is one form of the water. but I don't think I am water. But without water, I cannot exist, I cannot live. And of foods, without food, we cannot survive. And without eating, I know I don't have energy to talk. So in order to speak today, I have been eating for 65 years. All those foods support me and allow me to talk about Avalokiteshvara today. And not only those material things, but baby has no way to think or speak. In order to think or speak or talk, we have to study language. And in my case, because I was born in Japan, I learned Japanese language from my parents and sisters and brothers, and later I went to school and I studied Japanese. And this Japanese language, I use Japanese language in order to create very self-centered idea. I'm a very self-centered person, but in order to produce very self-centered idea, I need to use Japanese word, Japanese language. And Japanese language is a gift. It's not my personal possession since I was born. So without that gift from Japanese society, I can't even exist as a self-centered, ego-centered person. So if this self-centered, even this self-centered person is a kind of a production or a gift from the nature and from the community, from the culture. And now, I'm thinking in Japanese, but I have to speak in English. So later, I studied English. And after I finished my university, I had no desire to speak English. Then I started to practice with my teacher. Uchiyama Roshi asked me to study English. Until then, I studied English about 10 years at school, middle school, high school, and college. But I didn't speak any English. I could read some. But I had no desire to speak English. But because I was asked by my teacher, and he sent me to the English school from the temple, and also at that time, there are many Westerners came to Kyoto. Antaiji was located in Kyoto, and many Westerners came to Kyoto and practiced Zazen at Antaiji. But Uchiyama Roshi didn't speak any Western language. So he needs some translators. And some American people who could speak Japanese made translation for his teaching. They understood Japanese, but what he wants to talk, communicate, is Buddhist teaching, especially Dogen's teaching. Even for us Japanese, study Dogen and understand Dogen is a very difficult thing. So, those American people who understand Japanese can translate the word, but not really understanding what Uchiyama Roshi wants to say. So, he asked his students, his Japanese disciples, to study English, because he said, he thought, from now on, there are some people who have thorough experience with Zazen and deep understanding of Buddha's teaching and Dogen's teaching, and explain and express the meaning of this Zazen practice and Buddha's Andogen teaching in Western language. That's why he encouraged his disciples to study English. And even though I was not interested in studying English at all, somehow I couldn't say no. That was my problem. I was not good at saying no. That's why I started to study English. That was my first mistake. I'm reading not yes, decided my life, my rest of my life. That's why I'm here today. So, you know, my English is a gift from, you know, this situation, my teacher's request, and those American and European people who came to Antaji and talked with me in English and taught English. And after I came to this country, every American person who speaks in English is a teacher to me. So English language to me is a gift from, you know, American people and American society. So what I'm talking is really a production or product or fruits of those gifts. Without those, you know, gifts from the nature and from the society, you know, I cannot exist and I cannot function as a Buddhist priest. So this shohaku is simply a product or fruits of all those people's help and gift. But still, my what I'm thinking, and not only thinking, but my activity or behavior can be very self-centered. You know, these two sides is really here. And I think in my thinking, I'm very self-centered, but this entire being is supported by all beings with this, you know, network of interdependent origination. All beings support me. So when I see and I understand this reality, the natural way of my life is how I need to make effort. How can we support other people? At least try not to harm others. If I can, I could help. I want to help. That is kind of a natural way of life, because we are supported and helped. We try to support and help others. That is very natural thing. This very natural thing is Bodhisattva vow. You know, the first vow is beings are numberless, we vow to save them. Many American people don't like this word save, but we can use the word like help or support. So this Bodhisattva vow is very, very natural thing if we understand the reality of our life, that we are supported by all beings. We try to support, return our debt of kindness to our family and friends and people in the society. So Bodhisattva vow is not something particularly religious or Buddhist, but that is, I think that's a natural function of our life based on this interconnectedness. So what they are talking, those the masters are talking about Avalokiteshvara is, you know, this network of supporting each other. When we are in some needs or trouble, somehow, you know, the help come up, someone come up and help us. Actually, one Japanese young priest planned to join the study retreat here last 2 days, and he flew from Vermont to Chicago on Thursday, but he became sick and he couldn't participate, and he stayed with Nyozan-san, and he took the person to the hospital, and in order to take care of him, he couldn't join the retreat yesterday. I really appreciate his kindness and, you know, his that activity to help others, to offer helping is Bodhisattva Avalokiteshvara's function.
Cool.
Maybe each one of us are not so much compassionate as but we can offer some time in certain situation if we have time and energy, and whenever it's possible, we try to offer help and support to anyone we encounter. That is Avalokiteshvara. And another point they discussed is how we, as an individual, how we can function as a part of this network of supporting each other. So, Avalokiteshvara is our life, and we are already within this network of interdependent origination. So, our practice, what we have to study is how this network is working, and how we can be the healthy part of this network. That is their teaching, actually. And when we study this kind of teaching, and we practice Zazen, actually when we practice Zazen, we put our entire beings on that network, on the ground of that network. That means our thinking, our thought is very much self-centered and narrow and restricted. We can see this world or even this community only through a tiny tube. Or like a famous example in Chinese and Japanese culture is a frog in the well. Frog living in the well can see only tiny part of the sky. But the frog thinks this is the entire sky. And the way we see this world is the same as the frog in the well. Depending upon where we are born, how we are educated, and what kind of experience we have certain kind of picture of the world based on our karmic experiences, and yet we think this is the real world, this is my world, and whatever contradicted or against my view is mistaken or wrong or inferior. That is how we usually think, and that is a problem. That narrow view based on our karma, and usually we make our karma based on our like and dislike, or our thinking of whether this is good or bad, or right or wrong. That kind of system of thinking is easily created based on our karmic experiences, and I think we are bound within that personal or cultural restriction. And when we are sitting facing the wall, this upright posture and breathe through our nose deeply from our abdomen, and we let go of our thought. In Uchimaroshi's expression, opening the hand of thought, we usually grasp things with our hands of thought. But in our Zazen, we open our hand. Then, you know, even when we sit in this posture, facing the wall, still my brain produces very self-centered thinking, and those thoughts are coming and going. But an important point in this Zazen is letting go without grasp. When we think we are grasping, we open our hand. When we are thinking means when we sit facing the wall, there's no object. You know, wall is very plain, so there's no like and dislike on the wall. And yet, not so many stimulation from outside. It's become quiet. This room is quiet, and our mind also calm down. Then, all those thoughts coming and going became the object of this person. That means our mind is separated into two sides. One is those thoughts coming and going, and another is person sitting. And this person sitting is watching and trying to deal with these thoughts. Sometimes I feel, you know, this is a wonderful thought, and more often we think, I don't like this, and I want to stop it. When we are doing that kind of interaction with our thought, we are actually thinking. And when we are thinking about the thoughts coming and going, our mind is separated into two pieces. But important point in our Zazen is becoming one piece. Dajo then means becoming one piece. That means whenever we find there is a separation within our mind, we stop this interaction and return to just sitting. That is what we do in our Zazen. So our Zazen is a very simple thing. Simple practice, but very difficult. To be simple doesn't mean to easy. It's very difficult and also profound. There's no bottom and there's no end. There's no time we can graduate from this practice. It's continuous practice until the end of our life. We keep practicing this letting go of thought in order to see how our thoughts are deluded. And through, you know, this practice, what we do is putting our entire being, both our body and mind, on the ground of this interconnectedness. We simply become a part of this network of interdependent origination. Instead of ground of our thinking of like and dislike, or good and bad. That is what we do. Then, when we practice with this attitude, by one of the Chinese Zen master, actually he was the disciple of Dongshan or Tozan, whose name was Sozan. One time he said, I was not about Zazen, but he said, his disciple said, our practice is like a donkey is seeing the well. But the master said, that is not enough, that is not correct. But well is seeing the donkey. That means often well look into, the donkey look into the well, then his face is reflected on the water. And donkey is watching himself. But sometimes we think our zazen is like a donkey seeing the whale and watching and trying to figure out what this whale is and what this person, this donkey, is. In that case, donkey is seeing the whale. Whale in this case means this interconnectedness, this network as a whole. But the master said it's not like a donkey is seeing the whale, but whale is seeing the donkey. That means by letting go of thought, we don't see ourselves or this world, but this entirety of interdependent origination see this person, or we are seen by this entirety. Then we start to see how self-centered we are, how deluded we are. That is important point. So our zazen practice or meditation practice is not to see the truth or reality or Buddha nature or whatever as an object, because it's not possible. But we are seen by this reality, and we started to understand how deluded we are. And Sawaki Roshi, Uchiyama Roshi's teacher, said, when we practice zazen, we start to see how bad we are. That means our zazen practice is not try to see and find the truth or reality or something good, but by seeing and by seeing by the reality, we see how distorted our view are, and this is enlightenment. And we don't have much time. I'd like to introduce one poem by my teacher Uchiyama Kosho Roshi about the compassionate heart, or Jihi Shin, and that is what Avalokiteshvara is. This poem is translated by my Dharma brother, Daitsu Tom Wright. He was a co-translator of Uchiyama Roshi's book, Opening the Hand of Thought. And also he is the translator of Uchiyama Roshi's book, Uchiyama Roshi's commentary on Tenzo Kyokun, the title of the book.
Refining Your Life.
That is the original one.
Oh.
Now, something like a cooking your life.
Oh, I don't know.
The publisher changed the title. Anyway, Tom Wright translated many of Uchiyama Roshi's poems. Uchiyama Roshi wrote many so-called Dharma poems, of course in Japanese, and he has been translating some of them. And this is one of them. The title is Jihi Shin. Jihi is a translation, Chinese translation of Sanskrit word karuna. And Shin is mind or heart. And in Chinese, Jihi is two words, Ji and He. And Ji is the heart or mind to offer some help to increase happiness or joy to that person. And He literally means sadness or sympathy. And this He is our heart or mind try to help people who are in trouble or sad or painful situation and try to reduce the sadness. So compassion has two sides. One is offer more joy or happiness, and another side is take a sadness or pain from other people whenever we encounter. So these are two sides of compassion, Buddha's compassion. And Tom Wright translated this jihishin as an empathetic and compassionate heart. An empathetic and compassionate heart. And Uchamurashi's poem is as follows. Let me read the entire poem first. Sensing and holding dear, that link my life has with all things. Still, only as I grieve the meanness and imperfections of my own heart, can I feel empathy for the failings and shortcomings of others. The compassionate heart that is so wide as to include the whole universe, that includes the length of eternal time, that is the very depth of life without limit, that quietly resides even within me as well. May I have the heart that ladles up the depths of such life. This is the end of the poem. Let me read it again. Sensing and holding dear that link my life has with all things. Still, only as I grieve the meanness and imperfections of my own heart, can I feel empathy for failing and shortcomings of others. The compassionate heart that is so wide as to include the whole universe, that includes the length of eternal time, that is the very depth of life without limit, that quietly resides even within me as well. May I have the heart that ladles up the depth of such life. So his understanding of fat compassionate heart or compassion is the same as what those Zen masters are discussing. That is a connectedness or interconnection with all beings, and we can be only within the part of that interconnection. Even though when we study Buddhism, we study that teaching about the reality of our life. But Ujjamasya when I look at our mind or heart or inside of ourself, we really feel a separation. Yes, separation. And this is the center of the world. And all other things are kind of a material or a resource I can use to make me happy. So we always think, how can I get from that person? Or how can I use this situation to make me happy? Or to make me my life more comfortable? Or make myself more powerful and famous or wealthy? You know, that is how we really live in our day-to-day lives. I don't think we can completely negate that it's not true. When we honestly and deeply look at ourselves, even when we are trying to help others, still when we take a look at deeply, we find something egocentered. By doing, helping others, we want to have some kind of a return. You know, the return might be to hear thank you from that person, to be considered, you know, by people that I am a good person. So I have some desire to have a good reputation by other people. When we are doing something helpful, still we find some very egocentered motivation. So we cannot really negate that there's no such egocentricity within ourselves. That means separation. And think this is most important. That is what Ujjama Roshi is pointing out. So he said, still only I grieve the meanness. Meanness means self-centeredness, and always try to make profit for this person. And imperfections means even if we try to help others, our actions are always not perfect, not complete. And because of this self-centeredness and incompleteness of our practice or our activities, we have some grief or sadness and try to become help. I'm sorry, to become free from that kind of egocentric tendency. But it's really deep. It's almost like ourselves. So we have to see these two sides of our life. We are living only within this interconnectedness and being supported by all others. Still, I want to be the center of the world. So our life has these two layers. And I think our practice is how we can live with these two layers of our life and make our life at least even a little more helpful, at least not harmful to others. I think that is our Bodhisattva vow and practice in a very concrete, practical way. So, can I feel empathy for the failings and shortcomings of others, especially when we have some experience of some other people's kind of a self-centered way of behavior? We have negative feeling against that person, and we think, I'm better than that person. I make judgment, evaluation and judgment, and feel I'm okay, they are strange. Or they are not so good, but I'm better than them. That kind of mentality. So he's asking to himself, can I feel empathy for the failings and shortcomings of others? When we see or experience other people's beneficial activities, we can be happy and we praise those people. But when we see some negative activities by other people, we make judgment. is how we actually live, even though we are living together with all beings. So this structure of our life itself is a koan. How can we deal with this reality? And how can we deal as a bodhisattva with this these vows being a numberless way about to help or save or free them? And within this them, we are included. How can we allow ourselves to be free from self-centeredness? So we are not enlightened bodhisattvas yet, but we try to live together with all beings, even though we still have this self-centeredness. So this structure of our life itself is a koan we have to always facing and trying to practice. And second part, he said, what this compassionate heart, the hishin, is like. The compassionate heart that is so wide as to include the whole universe. And second is that includes the length of eternal time. You know, last 2 days, I always draw this diagram of Indra's net through including entire space and entire time from the moment of Big Bang until the end of this universe. This is one seamless moment. We make a segment in the time using our measurement, like one hour, 1 day, 1 week, 1 year, 1 century. But those are all man-made things. Within the time itself, there's no such separation. This is simply one seamless moment. And this space is also one seamless space. But we make separations and say here and there, or Japan and America, or China and France. Those difference, separation is only created within our mind, and that system is valid only within human society, human community. This outside of our human conventional community, there's no such time we can measure, and there's no such space we can divide. This is simply one seamless space and seamless time. That is what Ujjama Maharaj is saying here. This heart, this compassionate heart, includes this entire space and entire time. And that, in my usage of word, this seamless time is eternity. So this seamless time doesn't flow. But in our mind, time is like a stream of water flowing from the past to the present and from the present to the future. But that is kind of our concept about time, to understand the change. Beside this way of thinking, you know, time doesn't really flow. This is simply one moment. And in my understanding, this time which doesn't flow is eternity. So this heart, compassionate heart, includes the length of eternal time and includes the whole universe, whole space. That is the very depth of life without limit. Our life is also deep without limit. It's not, we think our life is only this collection of 5 skandhas, body and mind. And this is me. and when these five skandhas disperse, then disperse and shoha disperse, disappear. But our life is much deeper and broader and larger. And this compassionate heart comes from that larger life. And that quietly reside even within me as well. Even within me means even though we are so much self-centered, still when we take a look at much deeper than this ego-centered mind or thought, then we see the interconnectedness with all beings, and that is the source of this compassionate heart. So compassionate heart does not come from our thinking, but a much deeper layer of our life. So it's, no matter how self-centered we are, still this compassionate heart is there, deep in ourselves. And finally he says, may I have the heart that ladles up the depths of such life. How can we discover and become one with such a deep and broad and large life, much larger than these five skandhas? And compassionate heart comes from that life. This is Uchiha Roshi's poem about a compassionate heart, and this expresses the very essential point of Dogo and Ungan's discussion about what is Bodhisattva of great compassion, and the essential point of those three interpretations of this conversation. That's why I introduced this poem. Now it's 11:15. If you have some question or comment, please give me. Do you understand what I'm saying? What I said? Well, that's good. And there's no question, no question. That means you completely understand and agree.
You may agree, but responses, yes, sir.
Yeah, I certainly agree. I'm not going to say that I understood everything. One question that comes up for me is, my own selfish mind, and I'm certainly not always. I'm much more of the donkey looking into the well than the well looking at the donkey sometimes, and how I feel.
Mm-hmm.
So if from my heart comes compassion,
mm-hmm.
sometimes my mind will jump in there and say, oh, aren't you awesome? Or, why don't people appreciate you more? All those things that then create that mm-hmm. division between me and the receiver of the gift.
Right.
And so, do you have any ideas on how we can work
even
with that?
Even within ourselves, we have this conflict.
Yes.
I don't like this self-centered me. But this self-centered me thinks it's foolish, to try to help others. Even it's beyond our ability. Or even we are so busy and we have some other, responsibility or obligation. So we always have kind of argument between these two sides of ourselves, and also ourselves and people we are, encountering. So this is actually our koan, and there's no good answer, no good or complete perfect answer. We should do this way or that way. We have to deepen our understanding and awakening to this reality that we are living together with all beings. And still, in my mind, I'm very selfish. So how to deal with this? which is more important? And there's no answer. If we completely lost our tendency or energy to support and protect this person, this person cannot help others also. We have to keep this person, you know, healthy and energetic in order to help others. So to take care of this self-centered person is also a part of compassion. Otherwise, we cannot really help others. We have to learn how to learn skills and knowledge how to help others. To do so, we have to take care of this, you know, individual, almost selfish person. So this selfishness and selfness is part, is two sides of our life. And if we put too much emphasis, or if we hate one part of our life, it's not so healthy. So how can, you know, this kind of a, like a baby always crying to satisfaction and bodhisattva of great compassion, how can these two sides of ourselves be in a good connection, good relation? I think is the way to maintain our life in a healthy way. So fighting against part of our life or part of our behavior is not so healthy. But we need to understand and recognize. And what Uchaguroshi is saying in the first part is a kind of awareness or awakening to the imperfection or incompleteness of our practice and activities. And this awareness, I think, is a source of our practice of repentance. Mm-hmm. And Uchaguroshi always said, if we have, we live based on bodhisattva vow, we, together with these vows, we always have compassion, practice of compassion. Vow and compassion needs to be always together. That is what I wrote in Living by Vow. Vow and repentance. That means this awareness of incompleteness of our practice is really important. Otherwise, we create a kind of a fantasy of we are bodhisattvas, we help others. That is not so healthy.
So, Shohaku Roshi, thank you very much for your wonderful teaching today and this weekend.